This time on Weather Brains.
You just knew something was in the air.
We look back at a tragic and history-making day in Alabama weather.
The darkness, the human suffering, the chaos, it was something I will never forget.
May 27th, 1973, the day of the Brent Centerville tornado. You'll hear from a man who was there.
It was just a screeching solid white wall of debris coming down the street.
Plus, Weather Brains members remember it too.
And less than a mile away, the center point tornado was moving through the trees.
It's all coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather. I'm David Black of the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama, with fellow weather geeks, James Spann, chief meteorologist with ABC 3340 Birmingham, along with Brian Peters, J.B. Elliott, and Bill Murray, all a bunch of weather geeks. Thanks for joining us. Hey, James, how are you doing?
I'm just proud to be here in the midst of weather geekdom. I'm doing great.
I think you're doing especially great because rumor has it you're heading off on vacation.
Yeah, you know, it's hard for somebody in the weather business to take any time off for the entire first half of the year. We've got, the winter storm season, then you've got the storm tour we do every year, and then you're in the tornado season. I gave up years ago trying to take any time off in the spring. So usually come June, I will vamoose for a little bit, and I'll be off to the Redneck Riviera for a few days here.
And Mr. Peters, I assume, is going to be helping among other folks? Is this how things work?
Just about everybody in the roundtable is helping. Mr. Peters will be handling the podcasts and the vodcasts and the iTunes video updates. And JB will be handling some radio. And Mr. Murray will be handling some radio. And John Oldshue, who's been absent on this program of late, he'll be handling the television shift.
Well, have a good time. You deserve it.
I'm going to have a lot of fun. We're staying in a new place down there. At Gulf Shores, the Phoenix All Suites. It's a brand new high-rise that went up down there, really between the public beach and the state park. So I'll have a full report next week.
Is that place pretty close to, what is that, Stacy's Sugar Shack you've been known to frequent?
Yeah, Brian gave me a list of all those places. I don't hang out there, but boy, Brian sure does.
I just know the Pink
Pony. You
wouldn't
believe. Yeah, I'll be close to the Pink Pony. I will be very close there. So.
Well, James, I know that you're such a fan of global warming that I just had to bring up to you that CNN has run a story that global warming boosts poison ivy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the
he's not making it up. I saw it too, James.
I'm not making it up. Believe me, folks, this is the truth. It says in the first line, another reason to worry about global warming, more and itchier poison ivy. So not only does global warming create more poison ivy, apparently it even makes that noxious vine grow faster and bigger. Oh, I tell you.
You know, you learn a lot by watching the national media, don't you? Wow.
Oh, isn't it amazing?
Maybe that's why they saw that 16-foot alligator sunning on the banks of Inland Lake in Blount County this week. Global warming.
I think we're going to get to the point before much longer that virtually any malady that threatens us is all going to point toward the same source, you guys think?
Hangnails for sure.
I enjoyed hearing what Dr. William Gray had to say about global warming on our previous podcast. I think
Isn't he
put things perfect in pretty good perspective.
Yeah, he really
brings for people that have never listened to this program before, I encourage you to go back and check out the podcast with Dr. John Christie, who's the Alabama State climatologist, and the program with Dr. William Gray. They're both up on the archive site. We've chased that rabbit a bunch, and those two men are brilliant, and I encourage people to listen.
In other words, James is saying, go back and listen to other podcasts before making your judgments about us. Don't just judge it based off this podcast here. Is that where this is going?
Yes, that's right. We're going downhill in a hurry.
Well, I'm just curious as to where everybody was 33 years ago this past Sunday.
I was on duty at the Weather Service during the big tornado outbreak.
JB, was the office on Oxmoor Road, the National Weather Service Birmingham office? I know that it was still an observatory at the airport, but was the forecast office on Oxmoor Road in 73?
11 West Oxmoor, that's correct.
Okay. Was it 70 or 71 they moved to Oxmoor? I was trying to remember.
About 71, I think, but I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, that seems to be the right time. So, Bill?
Well, in 1973, I was 11 years old, and we lived in Roebuck, Brian, and I was already astutely aware of the weather. As a matter of fact, I was actually petrified of it. And so that morning was a Sunday. It was May 27th, and I woke up early that morning, and it was warm and that time of the year, so that I had the window open, and you could really hear the wind already, even as early as, you know, 7 or 7:30 in the morning. The Sunday paper had stories of tornadoes that had hit the night before in a little town called Jonesboro, Arkansas, and several people were killed. And it just felt like tornado weather. Of course, it was warm. You know, temperatures were in the 80s, and a dew point, you know, was high, and these winds. And you just knew something was in the air. So I had this intense, you know, feeling of dread the entire day. And we went through two waves of thunderstorms, one around lunchtime that produced a tornado out at Rock Mountain Lakes near Bessemer. And that was getting a little bit too close for comfort for me. Back then, we had WVOK. Was AM 690 was
the mighty 690.
Was probably our best weather station. And so I was glued to that. That wave went by, and you breathe a sigh of relief. And then a couple of hours later, another wave went by, and, you know, we thought the whole thing was over. So we went outside to play. If my mom had this wave, when she came to the door, she said, "Get in the house now." You knew she meant business. So she pointed to the north. And less than a mile away, the center point tornado was moving through the trees. And it was the first time that I'd ever seen a tornado. And, of course, we found out a little bit later that as JB actually knew the family, the man who got killed in center point, it was a very traumatic experience to go out there the next day.
I will never forget Dale Black down at Centerville Radar getting on the squawk box at night and saying, "We've been hit, we've been hit."
Dale Black was the meteorologist in charge. Back in those days, the National Weather Service had what they called WSMOs. Government, of course, is familiar with acronyms and loves acronyms, but that stood for Weather Service Meteorological Observatory. And actually at Centerville, or Brent, actually, just to the southwest of Brent, was the WSMO, and that housed the WSR-57. The WSR-57s were sighted by the National Weather Service away from metropolitan areas because back in those days, they did not have the capability to remove ground clutter. So the decision was made to move the radars away from the locations where...
And they also set them up on a grid basis.
Yes, yeah. Trying to get the best coverage they could, but at the same time staying away from metropolitan areas. Of course, with the WSR-88D, the Doppler radar, NEXRAD, whatever you want to call it, that has changed. But one of the things we decided we'd do tonight is to track down a person who was was involved with the what's called the Brent Centerville tornado. It occurred or began around 5:20 p.m. on May 27th in 1973. And this tornado has some interesting claims to fame because it is one of the longest tornadoes ever in the United States, with a total path length of at least 65 miles. And in addition to that, it knocked out, as JB has just pointed out, it knocked out the WSR 57. It de-roofed the building and took the radome and the dish right off the tower. And you can see those pictures. James, correct me, is it www.brenttornado.com? Is that the website?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
I didn't look that up ahead of time. But we tracked down a person who was in that tornado. He worked for the National Weather Service. His name is Ed Landry. He retired about 4 years ago from the National Weather Service in Mobile. Been living in South Alabama around Robertsdale. And we have Ed available to talk about some of his experiences in that particular tornado. Ed, how are you doing?
Doing fine, Brian. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. Ed and I go back a long, long way. Well, let's just say a long way. How's that, Ed?
Yeah, it's all relative, but I have some pleasant memories from back then, and it's good to talk to you again, especially about some of our favorite topics like weather.
Oh, absolutely. Ed and I were in the National Weather Service together in Atlanta. That's where our paths crossed, at least that one time anyway. We were there for a couple of years, as I recall, in the early 70s. Ed's retired now and worked as his last job. He was working at the National Weather Service office in Mobile, although I guess the number of hurricanes has gotten more significant and more frequent since you retired, right, Ed? So we can just forget global warming. We'll blame it on you.
there appears to be an uptick in activity. I don't remember paying quite so much attention to them as we have in the past couple of years. I think a lot more busy than I recall.
Well, we're talking to Ed today because Ed is a victim or survivor of a tornado that occurred about 33 years ago, May 27th, 1973, what's referred to as the Brent-Centerville tornado. Actually, one of the longer tornadoes that's occurred in Alabama. It has a continuous track of approximately 65 miles, and in addition to that, it went on, and we're not sure it was the same tornado, definitely the same thunderstorm, but it produced a great deal of damage, especially from just northeast of Demopolis all the way up into Shelby County and Montevallo, and one of the elements is that that tornado took out the WSR 57 radar at Centerville, and that's where Ed was working at the time. Now, Ed, I know that you were not working that day. You were scheduled to work a midnight shift, as I recall.
Yes, that's correct.
So what about what happened, or what do you recall, say, you know, that day or maybe the day before about the weather?
Well, what I do recall about it, it was a sunny day. It was breezy. Can't tell you which direction the wind was coming from now, probably south, but it was a sunny day. We had actually spent some time raking up the springtime leaves and things like that. Nothing really particular about it. That evening, time for supper. We'd had a nice Alabama flounder stuck in the oven and heard some thunder. Well, being quite interested in weather back then, pretty much so, I always found a thunderstorm an exciting show. But anyway, as the storm approached and trees around us, large hardwood trees, make it pretty impossible to see much more than a couple hundred feet in any direction, but a lot of noise, a lot of thunder. The thunder sounded strange. It sounded like it was taking place in a really large can of some kind. I mean, not a sound I'd heard before. And then the sound started. Like they have said before, it sounds like a freight train. It sounded exactly like a freight train, but only probably the biggest freight train I've ever heard in my life. But I had gone out into the street in front of our house, which was Alabama 25, and across the street from there was the Brent Baptist Church. And I'd seen several people standing in the vestibule there in between services looking down the street or up the street, whichever, toward the noise, and I looked down that street, and the noise became so loud, it just gave me a real uneasy feeling, almost nauseating. But I looked down the street and just saw a white wall. I didn't know if it was rain or not, but I had enough sense to know it was not something I wanted to stand there and look at. Never did see a funnel, per se, but it was just a screeching, solid white wall of debris coming down the street. So I ran back inside the house and told my wife, Pat, who's still with me these days, and said, we got to go. We have a problem. There's a tornado coming. I grabbed my infant daughter, Amy, out of her crib in her room, and we were going to run into a storm shelter, which you had to access through the outside of the house. Didn't make it. The wind was there. That white wall was ripping past the door, and there were just all kinds of debris. And so we ran for an interior closet. We're living in a 2.5-story wooden Victorian-style home, a very solid home, in my opinion, and we're renting it there. And we went to the interior closet, and we got inside the closet, and as the storm progressed those moments, the noise was just incredible. You could hear the glass breaking, and it was dark in the closet. But I get upset sometimes telling this story, so bear with me. The house started to shake a little bit, and then like you could hear the large heart pine timbers under the home starting to break up. And I said, my gosh, we're going to die. And I was 27 years old. I was invincible. That couldn't happen, and I was holding on to my wife in one arm in the closet, and the clothing had fallen down on us because one of the walls had pulled away, releasing the clothes rod. Had my infant in one arm, my wife in the other, and I pictured a large wall would just fall and crush the life out of us. And I wasn't scared so much as I was angry. I thought, well, I'm 27. I haven't even started life. I've got a new family, a new career, and I'm going to die? Didn't have time to be scared. Sounds strange. That took place later. But anyway, the storm did what it did. It moved on, and we were sitting downstairs in the closet, and it was raining on us. I said, wow, it's raining downstairs in a two-story house. So we came out of the house, and that's when kind of went into sort of a post-event shock thing. You just were kind of numb, like, well, what is this? But We walked out of the side of the house that wasn't there any longer and walked to the street, and I heard these noises across the street in the church. People were moaning and subdued conversations. There were power lines and trees. Still some daylight, but not much. It was raining, no hail. About that time, we decided, let's go back into where the storm shelter was in case the storm had a little habit of coming back, which it did not. But from then on, it was just a case of hanging around the house waiting for somebody to come and check us out. The MIC on duty at the time, his name was Dale Black, living up there. He had come into town on the heels of the storm because the weather station was down. He was calling for Pat and I. We came out of the storm cellar, and we walked out of town, and basically that was our experience with the storm, and of course the aftermath, and it was kind of amazing. But that was generally our 15 seconds or 15 minutes of experience with that sort of an adventure. To me, Brian, it was like, being as interested in weather as I was, natural phenomena, of course, you just are drawn to it, and thunderstorms always put on a good show, but I thought the tornado was a little bit overkill. It's sort of like an astronaut in training getting his first ride into outer space. And when I see people on TV these years going through the tornadoes, I know the numbness and the desperation they feel at surviving it. But more often than not, you do come out of them and just learn from them. And that's basically the overview of my experience with it.
Well, let me ask you, before the tornado actually struck your location, had you heard or paid any attention to, was there a tornado watch, any particular evidence that something was going to be bad that day? You mentioned it was sunny.
No, not to me. I wasn't anywhere near a media source at the time. I mean, it was a mid-shift days, as you may recall from the old days. You're not totally coherent in the middle of the day.
I do recall those, yes.
Yeah, but that's the price you pay for an adventurous career, I guess. But no, I didn't spend any time near the media outlets. I mean, we weren't watching evening news. Like I said, we had been outside raking leaves and doing mundane yard work. And curiously enough, being a photo bug, I had taken a picture of the house that day because we wanted to send to family members and show them where we were living in this small southern Alabama or central Alabama town. Well, the very next day, I took the after. So we had a before and after sequence of photographs that were taken inside of 24 hours apart. And I thought that was rather ironic because there sure was a difference. But no, there was no, if there was a warning process in effect, I was not aware of it because I wasn't suspecting it. And there wouldn't have been time to run through any type of device and tune in the rabbit ears to see what was going on. So, no, that one caught me completely by surprise.
Okay. Well, I know having worked a number of midnight shifts myself, you just simply try to survive and, be at your best when you work from 12 to 8. And then the rest of the day you just sleep or doze or nap or survive or rake the yard or whatever is necessary. Well, after the storm occurred, I understand that you actually went back to and what was called a WSMO, or a Weather Service Meteorological Observatory, which at Centerville, your job there, along with the MIC and the other staff members, was the radar and upper air observations.
Actually, upper air had not come to Centerville yet. We strictly were operating the WSR 57. That was the only mission for the building. After the storm went through, Dale Black just sort of accompanied us out of the storm path to yet another. We went to his trailer in Eolan, Alabama, where he took my wife and infant, and he said, Ed, we've got things to do, and then was running on adrenaline because it was still all such a new experience, and I don't know, I'd mentioned before about the fright factor, didn't have time to realize what we had really escaped because the devastation I saw just, for one day everything was beautiful and tree-lined streets and familiar, and all of a sudden it looked like the world's biggest bowling ball had rolled right through your front yard. But our mission was to go out to the weather office, where Dale had spent some time with a newspaper reporter prior to the advance of this storm and the line that it was associated with. Anyway, we went out to the weather office, and the power generator was hemorrhaging. It was trying to start, but it couldn't. There was no roof on the building. There was no radar antenna I was familiar with. We were to try and find anything we could extract in the way of paper records. But the one thing I do recall, I went and got the 16-millimeter film out of the remote PPI, or planned position indicator, scope for the history of this event. So I'm glad I did that. But I took that and probably hung on to it for a couple of days before I turned it over to the Weather Service. And so it was a busy night. And a sidebar to this story, if you'll allow me, my father was working for the National Weather Service in Birmingham at the time. But he was at the older site out at the airport, and I recall calling him real late that night, and I said, "Dad, we're all right down here." And he says, "Well, I'm glad you are. Why wouldn't you be?" And I says, "You haven't heard?" He says, "No." So you ask about how far-reaching this information was. That was a light note, but he came down the next day and was pretty impressed with the storm himself, but it was all downhill from there.
Well, that's very interesting. Just so that people understand, in the if you don't mind me using the term, Ed, the old days, we used to record on the WSR 57 radar, which was the first nationwide radar network in the United States. We used to record the PPI, as Ed referred to, the planned position indicator, the screen, essentially. We used to record it with a camera that was mounted over, as I recall, and I never worked at a radar site specifically, but as I recall, it was mounted over a second screen, a planned position indicator, and that recorded, was it like one picture a minute, or I can't?
No, back then, for those that care, that radar would scan roughly three rotations of 360 degrees every minute. And when we were in a severe weather mode, such as that storm was, because they had been watching that storm for some time, the 16-millimeter camera's assignment is to take one picture every other rotation of that remote little scope and then save it for records. And it was a very valuable tool even back then.
And the radar data was transmitted to the Birmingham National Weather Service office. Now, were they on Oxmoor Road at that time?
I don't recall now. That was really a long time ago. Like I had said, that there was one unit which was doing upper air tasks out at the airport where the old weather office was, so they very possibly had finally moved to the Oxmoor location, because there were two sites in Birmingham at the time. They had the observing unit at the airport in Birmingham, and then I think you had the forecasters generally working on the other side of town.
Right. As I recall, at that particular time, the Birmingham National Weather Service was located in Oxmoor Road. I think they had moved out to the Oxmoor Road location, and they were responsible for weather warnings, as I recall, for about 25 counties across central Alabama. So,
pretty big stretch. And the thing is, the only way we could really relay information to them was a remote, actually a very rudimentary picture by anybody's standard, which we would physically annotate and send to them, and it on a scale of 10, it probably at best was ever a 4 or 5, but they had to rely on a very poor second or third generation picture sent to them. They didn't have a radar scope, and also the word of the radar observer from Centerville, so we had to be very explicit in our phone calls, and generally we were at that time the eyes and ears for the initial stages of a warning process. It worked real well, but leaves a lot to be desired in a short fuse situation like that.
Oh, absolutely. And those were the days when the National Weather Service had made the decision to locate radars away from metropolitan areas because there was a considerably more ground clutter and electronic interference. Of course, when the WSR 88D came in and the Doppler capability was added to the radar, there was also electronic clutter suppression, so they can remove the clutter. So the need for the radar to be located away from metropolitan areas was essentially eliminated with the new radar. Well, Ed, listen, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us. This is the 33rd anniversary. We've just passed the 33rd anniversary of that tornado, and it's one that is going to be in the record books for a long time, since it is considered one of the longest continuous tracks of a tornado anywhere in the country. I appreciate you spending some time with us, Ed.
It really was my pleasure, and it's been good talking to you, Brian.
Good talking to you, Ed. Hope you have a great day.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll see you.
All right. Bye-bye.
That tornado, by the way, was the most deadly tornado for Alabama in 1973. The final death toll for that tornado was 7 killed and 199 injured. There were two other killer tornadoes that year. Ironically, one just 30 minutes after this tornado occurred, It was in Jefferson, St. Clair, the path was across parts of Jefferson, St. Clair, and Etowah counties, and it killed one person and injured 76. It was an F3 tornado, and then there was another one in May 8th that in Marshall and DeKalb County that killed two and injured 12. So those were the three killer tornadoes for that year. Interestingly enough, all of them coming in May, which is not, you know, May has been surpassed. May is like the fourth biggest month for tornadoes in Alabama. This has got to be, for our tornado season, our primary season being March, April, and May, it's got to be one of the stronger tornadoes. The Brent Centerville tornado was ranked an F4. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the longer tornadoes with a 65-mile tornado track. Today, most meteorologists that study severe weather recognize that when you start getting around somewhere around 65 to 75 miles or so, there's no magic number, but that seems to be kind of the length of time or the length of a path that you're going to get, and the supercells tend to dissipate, or the tornado dissipates, and the supercell tends to produce another tornado as it evolves. So we get families of tornadoes as opposed to some of these that are recorded as being, you know, like the Tri-State tornado back in the 30s that was considered to be a 600-mile path. It probably was not. It probably was more like a number of tornadoes from the same supercell. So anyway, a little historical look back on a tornado that still is one I think Central Alabama will not soon forget.
It was so tough to get warning information back then, depending on where you were.
Oh, I did in my early part of my career use what Ed was referring to. We called it the RATS. And I forget what the JB. Can you remember what that acronym stood for?
Radar attenuation something, but I'm not sure exactly what it meant. But it literally was the RATS.
Yeah, it was horrible.
What did that do?
It was a fax machine that essentially sent a picture of the screen. Now you got to remember, if you've looked at, well, if you're listening to us, you are a weather geek, but. You look at radar today, and you know we have many levels of colors. Well, you got to remember the WSR-57 was six gray scales. It was just, you know, one color. It didn't do any kind of volume scanning. It was the operator could actually rotate and elevate the radar beam to look at a storm. Could actually stop the rotation of the beam and then elevate it to look at a storm. And the problem there is that, of course, if he missed the exact center or the core of the storm, then you didn't get a good reading on it. And, of course, if he interrupted that, then the forecasters in Birmingham didn't get a RATS picture. And but it was a facsimile, and not very good at that, as JB says. It is amazing with what we have today that the warning system did work back then as well as it did.
The fax machine was a continuous machine that had a roll of paper in it, and it was very cheap fax paper, the lowest grade paper you can get, which was common usage for fax machines back then. But they would write notes on each radar picture that they sent, but sometimes we could barely make those out. We did already have a tornado warning in effect, but when Dale called on the intercom and said we've been hit, we immediately issued it again.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. There have been, and I was trying to think back, and JB, you may be able to remember this, or you may know the number. I know that a number of National Weather Service sites, radar sites specifically, have been hit by tornadoes, which when you consider the odds, it's probably statistically extremely small that, you know, these, well, today about 120 National Weather Service sites across the country can get hit. But I know Oklahoma City, I know they abandoned their building, or they went under the desks once, and the WSR-57 was there at the Will Rogers Airport. And I was trying to think. There have been a couple of radar sites that I know have been hit. I know there was a military site, a WSR-88D, that was damaged by a downburst. That's a pretty famous picture if you've never seen that. But I did look it up and wanted to confirm that it is www.brenttornado.com, and Ed's picture before and after the tornado are on that website. And, of course, if you want to look up some of the information about the tornado database, you can go to the National Weather Service Birmingham's website and click on Tornado Database, and you can pick just about any year or county you want in the state of Alabama, and you'll get a nice listing of all the tornado events. But certainly one that will be remembered in Central Alabama for a long time.
You guys are talking about the old WSR-57s, and that brings back what I now realize is a golden memory from that era. James, you probably recall this too. I remember many an evening visiting the National Weather Service forecasters over when they were on Oxmoor Road in Homewood. I guess we're dating ourselves, or I am. And those guys, JB, would have a clear plastic overlay that he would draw out the storms and rain areas of the plastic, or the plexiglass overlay had the county outlines, and that was how you plotted, tracked, gave updates on where the storms were in Alabama. It's amazing.
Yeah, we used to carry that overlay back in the radio room and do weather radio, just ad-libbing off of that plastic overlay.
Amazing how far we've come in 33 years, isn't it, JB?
I'm afraid so. Well, I'm glad so, yes. That was Centerpoint, by the way, that got hit in the tornado exactly 30 minutes later from the first one touching down north of Demopolis, and it plowed right through the heart of Centerpoint, and as you mentioned, it killed one person, which was a son of a friend of ours that got killed, and also there were 76 injuries and more than 300 homes, I believe, destroyed.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention that in the Brent-Centerville tornado, one of the interesting things was that we recorded over 12,000 acres of timber being destroyed in that particular tornado.
Right, that thing came right up through the middle of the Talladega National Forest on Highway 25.
That's correct. And, you know, there's pictures of the April 3rd and 4th tornado outbreak up in the Bankhead National Forest. And so it may not do damage to what we consider to be, you know, human structures, but it can certainly do a lot of damage even out in the forest lands.
All this talk really brings back some memories for me. I was ending my junior year in high school in May of 73, and I'm from Tuscaloosa, which is only 30 miles north of Brent, and my hobby then and still is today, amateur radio, and it was a pretty urgent call from Bibb County needing amateur radio volunteers to set up emergency communications. So a group of ham radio operators from Tuscaloosa picked me up, and we were one of the first groups down there, and it was the first time I'd ever seen with my eyes tornado damage. And, of course, it was dark, but it was eerie. The darkness, the human suffering, the chaos, it was something I will never forget. And it seemed like it happened just yesterday. It had a major impact, really, on shaping my life, what I would do for a living, and everything else. So just hearing the stories we've heard tonight and all everything else just really brings back some very clear memories for me.
James, were you still down there on Monday, the next day?
Yes, we stayed down there for 3 days. The next day, on Monday, we set up operations at the Centerville Baptist Church. Now, Centerville is adjacent to Brent. It's up on the hill south of the river. It was not damaged. So all of the folks like us were stationed up there where there was no damage, and we worked the communication post out of the Centerville Baptist Church for 3 days down there.
We probably rubbed shoulders with you because I was down there the next day taking photographs and some of the other guys from our office.
Yeah, and you know, there was an amazing documentary, and I wish I could get my hands on it, put together by the NBC channel here in Birmingham, WAPI, what it was called back then, Channel 13. The 30-minute documentary was called It Sounded Like a Freight Train. And I thought for 1973 Alabama television, it was absolutely excellent. I think they've still got a copy of that thing in the vault up there at Channel 13, David. You probably know more about that than I do, but and I don't know if you've seen that, but just a tremendous documentary shot on film. And to me, the most touching thing, they found an older man sitting in the ruin of the town of Brent playing his harmonica, and they rolled on that for a while, and that was the ending of the program. They put in, you know, different cuts of the damage over that guy playing the harmonica. Really powerful special. So even though it was a long time ago, in my mind, it was like it happened yesterday.
I know a lot of folks down there have not forgotten it either.
Yeah, you know, you go down there, everybody's got a story to tell, and one of the things I always encourage people to do, just drive right through the heart of Brent, and you won't believe what it looked like. But if you look at the Brent Baptist Church, there's the plaque right there by the front door. It described the tornado destroyed the church building in May of 73, and one man died in the church. His name was Andrew Mitchell, but thank goodness the other folks in the church were able to get to a safe place, and that was between Training Union, what Baptists then called Training Union, and the evening worship service. And we were very fortunate we didn't have more of a loss of life in that church there.
That completely overshadowed the Greensboro tornado, which was the same tornado. It cut across the southeast part of Greensboro and did severe damage.
Yeah, remember the old Southern Academy?
Right.
That school was taken out by that thing. That was a beautiful, beautiful old campus down there.
Mm-hmm. So is it safe to say that we have a few months of respite, having apparently made it now officially past the spring tornado season so we can sit back for a little bit, guys?
Well, you know, we had another quiet spring tornado season. We did not have a strong, violent tornado. I think we had one fatality this spring, David, but that was not a direct fatality. It was a lady ran into a tree that had fallen up in Marion County. But my greatest concern is the fact that it's been so long, 8 years, since we've had an active spring tornado season here. We're really going to start getting complacent, and I'm afraid it's going to take another big tornado to wake a lot of people up. I hope not, but it's been a long time. But, yeah, we can say so long, I think, to the tornado season, the spring tornado season of 06.
Now you're into those fascinating summer forecasts.
Yeah, I think I could go on vacation and just come back in October.
Yeah, just put out a forecast.
Because we're saying the same thing every time.
Yeah. Just put out one forecast, James. Hazy, hot, humid, chance of afternoon and evening thunderstorms.
Yep. Got a couple of neighborhoods getting an afternoon storm, high of about 92, and we'll see in October. Yeah.
Well, have a good vacation, James.
I will. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, as we go from tornado season, of course, we're only just a couple of days away from hurricane season, so going to be interesting to see. And I see that on the satellite image, we've got a little rotation in the northwestern Gulf, which probably won't amount to much, but kind of fascinating.
Time will tell.
I'm getting my suntan lotion, and I'm headed down to Lambert's for some throat rolls here.
Very well. If you'd like to contact us here at WeatherBrains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. Shoot one our way, and we'll be happy to see it. For the Weather Company Weather Geeks, Brian Peters, J.B. Elliott, Bill Murray, and James Spann, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Weather Brains, copyright 2006 by The Weather Company. All rights reserved. Adios.
Awesome show.